The great American author Mark Twain, in his book Life on the Mississippi, recalls the navigational instructions he received from a riverboat captain about the Mississippi River. Author Robert Dale summarizes his comments. The captain explained that the look of the river changes constantly at night, depending on the moonlight. On clear nights, shadows hide snags and sandbars. When nights are inky and black, all shores blur into straight lines. But on foggy and misty nights, the shores appear to have no shape at all. The possibilities seemed endless to Twain, so endless that he despaired so many variations to master. Twain complained bitterly about the complexity of the river conditions. He said, "Oh, don't say any more, please. Have I got to learn 500,000 different ways? If I tried to carry all of that cargo in my head, I would be stoop-shouldered." But the captain wisely quieted Twain's frustration. "You only need to learn the shape of the river." The shape of the river. And learn it with such absolute certainty that you can always steer by the shape that's in your head, and never mind the one that's before your eyes. Learn the shape of the river. Steer by the lasting shape that's in your head rather than the changing perspective before your eyes. So is there some great shape to the great river that is the church? Is there some basic way to navigate church so as to accomplish its mission of spreading the gospel of Jesus Christ to the ends of the world? Because as I look around town, I see a ton of different methods of doing church. As I look across one denomination, the Church of the Brethren, I see a ton of different ways of doing church. I see big churches and small churches, house churches and urban churches, rural churches, ornate churches and simple churches, old order churches, modern churches, churches with lots of staff and churches with no staff at all, churches who challenge cultural norms and churches who affirm those cultural practices, patriotic churches, pacifist churches, open and affirming churches, family churches. I think you get the idea. There are a lot of ways that we do church. But is there a single shape to the river that guides us all navigating the church? I want to distinguish this morning between principles and particulars. And I'll explain those, but principles and particulars. Particulars change. Principles do not. Think about the Grand Canyon. How many of you have seen the Grand Canyon? Good. I think you'll understand this. I've never seen it, but it's 277 river miles long. It's up to 18 miles wide and a mile deep. Having never seen it, I have understood from others that you are simply overwhelmed by its magnitude and its beauty. The canyon is an illustration of principles and particulars, because when you look out over the canyon, what do you see? It's the canyon's beauty, its particular colors and formations, its depth and its size. All of those things that stun the senses, those are particulars. What's the principle of the Grand Canyon? The principle is it was formed over millennia through this slow process of river eroding earth, a process that's taken 5 to 6 million years, a principle that didn't change erosion. Erosion doesn't change. It lasts. But the particulars, the shapes, the contours, the formations, those continue to change. And so this can be seen in the church. The early church started by those first disciples looked a lot different than what we're doing now. The first brethren, those 8 people meeting at Alexander Mack's house in Germany, reading scripture together, that looks a lot different than us now. Even HCOB has changed over 140 years, and that's okay. Particulars are supposed to change. Principles are not. The problem, as I see it, is we are often more worried and consumed by changes in particulars, rather than often even bothering to understand the principles that caused it all. We argue, we grumble about changes in the particular, music styles that shift, dress codes that shift, methods of performing the ordinances of communion or love feast that shift, pastoral styles shift. All of these changes are changes to the particular. But did any of them really change the principles of the church? Did a change in music style change the fact that the church still proclaims Jesus as Lord? No. I love this text from Matthew 16, because in this story, the gospel of Matthew's focus is about to change. The gospel, up until this point, has been about the disciples figuring out who Jesus is. What's this way all about? And the disciples, especially, have been just getting to know him. And he poses this question to the disciples in Matthew 16, who do people say that I am? And the disciples give him this slew of answers, one of the prophets, or maybe John the Baptist. And Jesus asked them then to just speak for yourselves. Who do you say that I am? And Peter speaks up and says, you are the Messiah, the Son of the living God. Okay. The story of Jesus has reached this very important point when Jesus' closest friends now know who he is. The disciples get the principle, right? The principle of this whole deal is that Jesus is the Lord, and his lordship will change everything. But then as Jesus continues to speak, his further instruction, he's going to use a word that appears only twice in all of the Gospels. Twice. Here, and a couple chapters later in Matthew 18, this hardly spoken of word by Jesus is church. Church. Now you should have a puzzled look on your face because only two scripture passages in all four Gospels would refer to this thing, the church, this thing that I've committed my whole life in service to twice in the Gospels. Some people say it's because he wasn't out to start a new religion, some new institution, rather he wanted to reform Judaism or just show people a new way, not a religion, but a movement. Regardless, Jesus has this to say to Peter about the church. He says, and I tell you, you are Peter, and on this rock I will build my church, and the gates of Hades will not overcome it. I will give you the keys to the kingdom of heaven. Whatever you bind on earth will be bound in heaven. Whatever you loose on earth will be loosed in heaven. So there's a lot there, but I want to focus on just two things to unpack. First, Jesus renames Simon to Peter. Probably many of you have heard sermons on that, and Peter means rock, and so this is a symbol of the firmness on which the church will stand. The church doesn't stand on sand, but on rock. And that footing is so solid that not even the gates of hell can prevail against it. Essentially, the church can't lose. Now, this passage has been argued for centuries concerning its implications for the Pope, the Catholic Pope, and the head of the church. But I think that's missing the point. The point is that the church sits on solid ground. The church sits on the solid ground of the principle that Jesus is Lord, the principle that Peter just said. So it's a lot less to do with who's the head of the church and more to do with what's the head of the church. The brethren would say, Jesus. Jesus is Lord. That's the principle. So the second point that I want to draw from this passage is this issue of binding and loosing, because I think that's where we often get confused. Jesus gives Peter and this church the keys to the kingdom of heaven and the power to bind and loose. Does this mean that the church has the power to decide who's in and who's out of heaven? No. Scripture is clear that Jesus gets that authority. But what we do get to do is bind and loose issues of particular importance for our time. The principle is clear, the particulars are not. So we get to organize the particulars, keeping in mind that they will have eternal significance. Jesus is Lord, but how we organize the church, that's up to us. That's our responsibility. And I think sometimes we fall into the illusion that Jesus has laid out for us this whole plan of the church, that Jesus dictates to us that we need pastors and deacons and district executives. Jesus doesn't say any of that. That Jesus tells us that we should worship on Sunday mornings at a special building called the church, and that we should sing songs and listen to sermons there. That Jesus tells us that we need some kind of leadership team and special committees and church picnics and vacation Bible school. No, those are all particulars that Jesus doesn't weigh into. How we do church is up to us. He only talks about church twice in all the Gospels. So how should HCOB be doing church? Well, I want to highlight just a couple particulars that I think have changed among you and flourished. First, I want to talk about that Sunday at 9 worship gathering, the group that called themselves the 12 disciples when we arrived. That Audrey and I were fairly well convinced, well, this might not be around much longer, and I think some of you thought the same thing. It's different. Food and tables and casual music, a band that doesn't take themselves very seriously at all, and an informal style. That worship style kind of strips away the particulars and the structures that for some people got in the way. And it has a feeling of a judgment-free zone, as Planet Fitness would say. This gathering is flourishing, as many of you have noticed and commented, as an alternative place for people to connect with God and each other in a life-sharing manner, because you allowed the particulars to change. The other thing I want to mention is Youth Club. It's flourishing as a children and youth ministry with incredible diversity that continues to morph and to change in its particularity. This is a ministry that was once described as an outreach ministry to children in our community. But as many of us have come to understand, calling it an outreach ministry just isn't quite right. It's about as in reach as we get. To say outreach means that these kids aren't a part of the church, but many of us have discovered quickly that they consider themselves insiders. But we get to decide, remember? We decide who's in and who's out, so we can rename them as insiders. We get to decide those particulars. And this is a big change. Remember a few years ago, Pastor Audrey stood up here and banished a phrase? Any of you remember that? She said, "You can no longer say we have no kids." Remember that? Audrey does, I do. Well, some of you didn't hear it, because I've still heard that phrase, but I will say a lot less. Because we do have kids. We've always had kids that considered themselves a part of this body. And for some reason, our particulars, until more recently, didn't allow them. But the particulars are changing. So for those of you who still want to use the phrase, well, either stop talking or just show up, okay? And witness the vital ministry of inreach to these children. Let's allow particulars to change. There's no one way to do church. The Grand Canyon of the church has been and is being formed in every generation of this thing. And Jesus has given us the authority to do it. So let's stop getting in the way of ourselves. And let's start allowing the principles, Jesus is Lord, to shine through new particulars.